Welcome to the Muslim Sheroes of Minnesota podcast, where we spotlight the Muslim women of the Minnesota community. My name is Nosheena Hossein, and I'm the executive director of RISE, Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. Our mission is to amplify the voice and power of Muslim women through storytelling, leadership development, and civic engagement. What is a Shiro? A Shiro is a female trailblazer who is creating change in her community. She takes risks, she challenges misconceptions, and addresses injustices. Shiros are on a mission to build a better world, and the sisterhood is here to support them and lift their voices.
Meet our new Shiro, Jueria Jama. Jueria is a 17-year-old student from North Minneapolis who became involved in the climate justice movement when she realized that environmental racism and air pollution were affecting her community's health. She joined Minnesota Youth for Climate Justice, where she brings an intersectional anti-capitalist lens to climate activism. Keep listening to hear Jueria tell her story in her own words.
I grew up in North Minneapolis, and there was our community was majority Somali and Hispanic, and so I grew up with a lot of people that looked like me. We had a lot of masjids that were near our house that we were able to go to during Ramadan and just all the time. And so I think growing up in North Minneapolis and in the community that I was in, I was able to foster my relationship with Islam a lot more because I was surrounded with people that that followed Islam and that wanted to teach their children and their children's friends and their friends about the religion. That I think has really definitely like impacted my experience, because even though I no longer go to a school that has Muslims that look like me, I still feel very comfortable in my identity because I grew up with people that made me understand it more and made me feel better about who I was and what I believed in. I got involved with environmental and climate justice organizing in, I would say, a very, very different way than most of my peers and people that I work with now. In January of 2019, we went to the state capitol. And at the state capitol, we saw there was a big room, the governor's office, and there were youth that were packed inside of it with the governor sitting in front. And so we all piled in as well, finding chairs to sit in. And the image that I saw, I think, was the first that I've ever experienced of youth power. It was the first time that I ever seen youth sitting right next to a leader and asking him the questions and not him asking them the questions. It was just amazing to see how much power there was from students that were in the same grade as me or even like a year or two older. They finished asking the questions after pictures were taken and the event was over. We were leaving, and the girl whose page I saw this event on, so social media is always great, came up to talk to me and was asking me how I felt about the event and how it went. And I told her how, you know, amazing was for me because that was something I never experienced. And so she gave me her contact information and later decided to onboard me onto the organization that she was working with. And so that was how I first got involved with the climate movement, through a field trip and through meeting people that really just wanted to get people their age and that looked like them involved in the fight as well. So when I first got involved with the climate justice movement, I remember feeling like I didn't have anything to bring to the table. And the organization that I first joined when I got involved was asking me like what my climate story was. And I was like, I don't have a climate story. But I remember one of the adults that was working there kept like trying to ask me questions about where I lived, my neighborhood, what the people I was in community with looked like, the things that they did. And it took me a really long time, but I finally realized that living in North Minneapolis, where there's highways right next to our apartment building, where there's factories that are pushing air pollution in, where there's an incinerator that's burning trash, all of these things were contributing to air pollution. And that was why so many people in our community suffered from asthma. It took me having that conversation to realize that environmental and climate justice are so complex because of the inequalities that are within them. And something about air pollution that a lot of people don't seem to realize is places that are filled with pollution are usually BIPOC communities. Our community was majority Black and Hispanic, and we were right next to different factories and also two intersecting highways. And so we dealt with pollution like times 10. And in St. Paul, in the Rondo community, that's the same exact thing that's happening. And so the inequalities within the environmental movement are the reason why so many problems exist. And I think that what I believe in is that there should be equity for all people, and that nobody should feel like they don't have access to clean water, clean air, clean food, clean transportation, and all of these things, and yet they exist still right now. And so one of the biggest reasons I believe that I first got involved was, you know, after realizing my own climate story and realizing that many people didn't even realize that where we lived was affecting us so much, I really wanted to be a voice for my community and try to get some meaningful change happen there and understand the complexities that are a part of the environmental movement. You can look at climate justice the same way that you can look at environmental justice. They're both intersecting in the same ways that the inequalities exist within them. And something right now that I know a couple different organizations are focused on is responding to climate migration. So climate migrants that are moving because of how bad the climate has become in the different cities or countries that they live in. And a lot of these climate migrants are people of color that are moving from their countries because of carbon emissions and because of countries that are polluting them. The organization that I first got involved in 2019 was a predominantly white youth-led climate organization, and I was one of the only few Black youth that were involved within the movement, and I remember feeling so alienated and isolated in the work that I was doing. One thing that we were working on a policy bill, I remember, in February, so this was only like a few weeks or a month into trying to learn what organizing meant. And I remember they were asking us for our input because we were talking about equity and making sure that there's equity within these policies and how they affect BIPOC communities. And I remember that the other BIPOC folks that were there, we gave our feedback, and then our feedback was completely dismissed. It was taken out of the bill that we helped write with them. And then I remember the day before the bill was being released, they were calling on all of us trying to put in last minute changes because they wanted to make sure there was equity there. Something that we've realized within the climate movement is, I feel like there is this performative notion of trying to be inclusive, using the word inclusivity, trying to be like, we stand with, we hear, we support, we uplift Black voices, but not actually taking the critiques and the criticisms of Black and BIPOC communities. And so that's the same thing that we see within the climate movement as a whole. A lot of people talk about the boundary waters, which we understand is important. We understand we need to preserve the boundary waters, but they don't talk about the actual people that are affected within the same way. And we understand that the people that are affected are usually people of color that live in low-income neighborhoods. And so the same focus isn't given to them. It's given to the boundary waters and more affluent, wealthy youth that are able to actually take part in that and be a part of the boundary waters and the activities that happen there. So I think dealing with my identities, especially like as a Black Muslim woman, has definitely been hard to navigate. The first climate strike that I ever participated in, which was March of 2019, I was the only Black person on stage with all of these different organizers. And you stand there, you look, and you see that nobody is there that looks like you. But yet the idea is that we're so inclusive, you know, we support you and all of that. And so for myself, I've been trying to navigate that and navigate the different identities that I hold. I'm Black, like my skin is very visible first. And that is always seems to be like a barrier between having me present or just using me as a token, as a person to be there to say that they fit their Black quota. But on the other hand, being Muslim is also a challenge within the climate justice movement. I remember before COVID happened, I remember when we were planning our Earth Day climate strike. And because our organization was striking, when we were part of the national org, We were part of a coalition of different youth organizations across the country, and we were striking every single Friday, like Fridays for Future. And so when we were planning our Earth Day climate strike, many different organizers wanted it to fall on April 24th, I believe, which was the first day of Ramadan. And we had a bunch of Muslim organizers, especially in Minnesota. And so we started saying that we couldn't do a strike in Ramadan, especially on a Friday, the first day of Ramadan, because one, it would be hot out. We're fasting. It's the first holy day of the month. And we were met with so much backlash. Many people didn't understand what Ramadan even was or even what Islam was. And so I remember we had to put together an entire presentation on what the month of Ramadan was and what it meant to Muslim people. And when they refused, well, they didn't refuse, but it took them a really long time to finally agree to pushing it to Wednesday. And so that was one of the biggest struggles that we had, you know, being Muslim and having to deal with that, but also being a Black person and having to deal with racism on the other side. So it's really been a battle, because I think people really underestimate how much youth can perpetuate the same racism and Islamophobia as adults, but it's very present and we're still trying to navigate it. I'm very lucky because our organization in Minnesota, Minnesota Youth for Climate Justice, we are predominantly people of color, and there's a lot of Muslims that are in our organization. And so confronting the anti-Blackness and the Islamophobia has been a lot easier to deal with here than it has been to deal with on a national level. And one of the things that we started doing that we haven't done a ton of, but we started doing workshops on race and the environmental justice movement. So we address the anti-Blackness within our movement by offering resources and giving workshops on race and climate, but also putting money where our mouth is and be, you know, helping out with mutual aid and bail funds that were occurring through the protests. We do need to do more around religion, especially. Islam is a huge part of the reason why I do the things that I do, especially within this organizing movement. And, you know, Islam tells us that we should be taking care of the earth, that we shouldn't litter, that we need to leave the earth as we found it, which, you know, we found it perfect and we need to leave it perfect instead of polluting it and leaving it filled with trash and all of these things. And so I know that as a Muslim, that it's my duty to try to protect the earth, to restore the earth to where it once was. And especially within the climate movement, you know, you can really tie it to anything that you can think of, you know, even homelessness, because, you know, especially in Minnesota where it's nearing winter soon and it's freezing outside, homeless people will be suffering at a higher rate because of the way that the climate is changing and it's worsening. And if we as Muslims are not looking at it and realizing that nobody should be unhoused, nobody should have to deal with the winter without clothes, nobody should have to go a day without being fed and without having water or sanitary products and all of these things, then we're not really doing our duty as Muslims to help people around us. I think it's so easy for people to burn out because sometimes you don't really see the benefit of your work. Especially when you're doing things surrounding policy, you could be working on policy for a year or 2 years, but you're not going to see any legislation actually get passed or anything being pushed. But having faith and understanding that we're doing this to help other people and not ourselves, and we're doing it because we know that our Lord is telling us that we need to be kind and we need to treat people with love and respect around us, is really important to keep in mind. So I don't think I could be doing the things that I am doing right now, like, without having faith. In terms of policy, one of the biggest policy aspects that our organization has been working on for the past year has been divestment. And so we've been doing work with the State Board of Investment to divest from fossil fuels. And in May of this past year, they divested from coal, but they're still refusing to divest from oil and other fossil fuels because they still see a benefit to it, even though we've done an impact studies and have shown that it would be better for the state, for our entire state and our government, to switch to renewable energy instead of fossil fuels, because that money is really not helping our planet right now, especially our own state, and it's really a dying industry. And so that's one of the biggest policy issues that we've been pushing. And as I mentioned earlier, policy work is really, really slow. I remember this time last December, it was like the first week of December, where we testified at one of the State Board of Investment meetings about divesting from fossil fuels. And we're here a year later continuing to do the same exact thing with the same demands. So that's definitely been a fight. As a young person, I would say it's extremely frustrating, because I think there are two different things that adults say. One of the things is, wow, you're so young. It's amazing you're doing this work. I wasn't doing this when I was your age. And so it's kind of like this backhanded like compliment of like, oh, wow, like we never see young people that are involved in the movement or in this work. So it's really surprising, when in reality, it's not, and that there's so many other youth like myself that are involved in this work. They're just not given the space and the attention to actually have their voices centered and heard. And the other thing that I hear is, you're too young to know what you're talking about. And so a lot of times, especially with the policy aspect, we go into these spaces doing our research, testifying to these bills, working with different legislators, and yet we are still too young to understand what we're talking about. The truth of the matter is that anybody can read policy, anybody can understand bills, anybody can get involved if that's something that they truly believe in and that they care about. I remember last year when we were doing a bunch of different sit-ins at the state capitol when we were calling for divestment, and they already knew who we were, right? Because we were there like almost every single week doing sit-ins inside the capitol, and they understood that we weren't going to leave. So they looked at our signatures and they looked at the studies that we wrote up. And though we weren't able to, you know, push it further, we were able to get meetings from them by showing up every single day, and by them finally acknowledging the fact that just because we are young does not mean we're going to leave when you tell us to. There's a lot of issues that are going on right now, especially in the environmental justice movement. The water permits for Line 3 were approved by Governor Waltz a couple weeks ago, and there's a lot of frontline organizers in northern Minnesota right now that are protesting against the building of the pipeline. And so because we aren't able to show up and support them in person, we have been posting about it on our pages on, you know, the ways that we can contact our representatives and what numbers to call the governor's office, the different people that are involved. And within the other things that were happening, we've been doing the same thing where we've been trying to post action items for people to do instead of just posts for people to reshare. So especially with Line 3, we've been posting things for people to call, emails to send, and organizers to follow. The Janu Collective in northern Minnesota have been doing a lot of work, and so we've been trying to uplift that as well and trying to consistently post these action items so that people can, you know, stay aware and stay involved. One of the biggest things that I want to see is resources being allocated to people. You know, it doesn't really make any sense for a city and a state that has so much money to have homeless people, to call in cops, to bulldoze these encampments, to arrest people for not having a home to live in. It doesn't make any sense that people have to buy water bottles because their water has lead in it, or that people have to go to the hospital with asthma because there's air pollution in their city. And a lot of the things that we see are very intentional, right? It was very intentional to kick people out of their homes and then to vilify them for being homeless, right? And it's very intentional to create these factories and these pollutions in places that are low income, because you believe that low income people and people of color don't deserve the same things as people that have more money. And I really hope we can start to see a shift in the way we address problems and the way we address issues that are going on in our community, instead of trying to put a bandage over it.
You've
you know, that's really hard growing up, you know, feeling like there isn't an accurate representation of who you are, who your family is that you grew up with. I would say to any young Muslim sisters out there that don't be afraid to get involved. You know, your identity isn't a barrier. And there are so many people that look like you that would love to support you in the work that you're doing. You're not alone in this. And, you know, getting involved would be really amazing to see. Right now, one of my biggest Muslim heroes is definitely Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. Last year, I shadowed her at the United States Capitol, and I was able to see what it meant to be resilient, right? You know, walking with your head high and ignoring what's going on around you. She's definitely inspired me and has gave me great representation, especially as a Somali Muslim woman. I would say Rashida Tlaib and, you know, all the other Muslim women that are in Congress right now are breaking barriers and are authentically being themselves, even while they're being harassed and trolled. And it's just amazing to see how much strength that they have in fighting against these barriers and people that feel like they don't belong. I've always seen myself to be a community organizer. I remember growing up, I wanted to be a social worker, and helping those around me in meaningful change is something that I know that I want to be doing definitely for the rest of my life. There's so many different community issues. I know that in the near future, I just want to be a part of the community and not only doing volunteer work, but, you know, being involved in policy and trying to make sure that things are being pushed so that people are able to get better resources and are being able to be treated better.
Thank you to Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota for funding the Shiro's Project. To learn more about Shiro's and Reviving Sisterhood, visit us at www.revivingsisterhood.org. Find us on social media at Reviving Sisterhood on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.